It's Saturday morning. It's 10 o'clock. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
And we are here on this first Saturday in September, which is an absolutely beautiful day. And as usual, alive and well with a lot to say because there's always a lot going on. And want to welcome everybody back if you're a regular because you make the place. And if you are new to the show, if somebody told you about it or you're driving by or whatever, try to stick around for the hour. We always guarantee you that you'll learn something. Never know what, never know what arena, but you will learn something, and that part is for sure. So, where to begin? What a week, huh?
Kind of lackluster.
Well, the only thing that wasn't exciting this week was the stock market.
Yeah, there's a lot of other stuff going on. That's
really
true.
Is.
A lot of news. Not all of it good, and not all of it bad either. But it was just one of those weeks where the market didn't react to anything, and you can kind of see that in the results. The Dow was down just 0.2%. The S&P gained 0.6. Nasdaq actually had a nice week, though. It gained 1.5%.
It had been struggling for a while. It seems to be regaining its mojo a little bit.
It definitely seems to be sort of leading the other indexes higher. I think what's happening right now is that both good news and bad news are being interpreted as good news because even if – so good news is good news, but then bad news means, okay, maybe the Fed won't taper.
Yeah.
And maybe the Fed won't hike rates. And so the market's almost cheering a little bit of bad news so that the Fed just stays status quo. And I think that's what we're seeing. And that's why you're seeing the NASDAQ go higher on the negative news,
exactly,
because it's more affected by valuations and therefore interest rates. I think that's what's happening, or that's what it seems like. There's no way to really tell, but I think it's a decent theory.
Yeah, great theory, actually.
One issue that has consistently driven markets this year is COVID, and there's actually some moderately good news on that front. The growth in cases across the U.S. is starting to flatten out after about 8 weeks of dramatic rise. And that's a very similar trajectory to the Delta variant, that the Delta variant has taken in other countries like India and the U.K. Additionally, positive rates are dropping and hospitalizations appear to be slowing and deaths are no longer rising. In fact, they dropped a little bit this week. It's still too early to say for sure, but it all appears like we are approaching the peak of the Delta wave. Almost 65% of the country is fully vaccinated, and over 76% have taken at least one dose of the vaccine. There's also a huge number of people with immunity through previous infection.
Oh, I'm sorry. They don't count.
Well, they don't count in the numbers, but right, they definitely count.
And it's only, 6 to 16 times better or something like that than the vaccine?
They say it is the strongest form of immunity. It doesn't make you fully immune. There are people that get second cases, but it does give you some protection.
I don't think I've heard of anywhere the breakthrough cases, they call them, have killed anybody.
I don't know about that, honestly.
There may be an exception.
I'm sure there is
to every rule, but in general, if it doesn't protect you 100% from getting sick, it's certainly not a bad thing to have because you may be asymptomatic for that matter.
That is true. All in all, the latest surge appears to be slowing, and it remains to be seen if another surge will hit the colder climates once people start moving indoors in the Northeast and the Midwest.
Yeah.
So that's, I think, one of the bigger concerns right now. But most of the numbers look pretty are trending more positive right now.
We flattened the curve.
Yeah, that's what it looks like. I don't think we did anything. I think this thing just does what it's going to do.
Does, yeah.
There's no stopping it. All right, new subject. Have you tried to buy a car recently? If you found prices high, dealers unwilling to negotiate, a lack of supply, it's actually because a shortage of semiconductor.
Yep.
And it's kind of self-inflicted, although the theory behind the move was good. It did not work out like the manufacturers thought. When coronavirus hit, auto manufacturers canceled chip orders, anticipating a lack of demand for their product for a prolonged recession.
Oops.
Yeah. Well, the opposite happened, and the demand went through the roof, and the chip makers, after they got all these canceled orders from the automakers, they reallocated their production to consumer electronics instead of cars. And so when new orders from the car makers came in, they were kind of caught flat-footed and couldn't adjust fast enough. This has caused sales of cars to actually plummet to record lows. And it's not because the demand isn't there. It's that the cars aren't there. Inventories for cars are also at record lows. The good news is that employment in auto manufacturing has been trending up as car companies try to ramp up production. And so the situation should be temporary, but it's pretty dramatic if you look at the charts for sales and inventories right now for new cars. They're really, really low compared to historic norms.
Intel's putting the finishing touches on a $10 billion chip factory in Oregon.
I didn't know that.
Yep. And I mean, they're moving equipment in
right.
like that. And then Taiwan Semiconductor is building a $2 billion place in North Phoenix. And all of that is going to really improve the situation, but not yet.
Yeah. Those things take a while.
Get humming.
There was a ton of economic data this week, and it was all mixed. About half the reports beat expectations, but half failed to do so. Much of the data was about housing, and again, it was mixed, but it showed a pretty clear picture of where the market is nationally. And Howard and Angela were talking about this, and I think this data really backs up what they were saying. Pending home sales were the first release of the week on Monday morning, and they fell 1.8% versus an expected gain of 0.3%. Then came the FHFA House Price Index, which was expected to rise 1.9%. It came in a little lower, but still high at 1.6%. The Case-Shiller Home Price Index year-over-year number was plus 18.61%. That's enormous.
Yeah, and if you annualize the first week of June, it's 24%.
Crazy. Mortgage applications fell 2.4% week-over-week. Lastly, the Home Price Purchase Index rose 4.9% quarter-over-quarter. So if you think about all those numbers, it really shows that home prices climbed dramatically and continue to do so. Well, every index related to purchasing is falling, but falling very moderately. So I think what they were saying is that there's still a ton of demand, maybe not as much as 4 months ago, but there's no problem selling a reasonably priced house in this market. In fact, right. You probably will get multiple offers.
Actually, Angela and Howard went through it was a five-step approach to the question they get asked a lot, apparently, which is this housing market going back to normal? And they clearly demonstrated on all five metrics that it's nowhere near normal.
No, it's not. It's definitely still a seller's market. And, it's not quite the frenzy that we saw a few months ago. It's still quite a strong market.
Yep. It's still a seller's market, let's face it.
Yep, no doubt about it. We want to talk about the jobs number, but I think that we are coming up on a break, so we'll do that after the break. And it was pretty interesting this week. And also, I have to give props to my dad. He actually predicted this would happen.
It's so. All I can do to not come right out and say, I told you so. And I promise I won't say that after the break, but I did sneak it in just because of that.
We noticed.
It was actually, when you hear people like, Geraldo Rivera agreeing with me the next day, then this is easier than people are making it. You know, there's a lot of overthinking that goes on in the many, many aspects of media, and a lot of it's because they really want Biden to be successful. They don't care about the numbers. They just want to do something good. All right, don't go anywhere. We'll be right back. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour. Welcome back to the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
And we will have a trivia question. In fact, let's have it right now. Brought to you, as usual, by Ken Bales at First Coast Alarm. You can call Ken at 904-636-7888. According to the IRS, and this is the latest number I can find, it's for 2015, what percentage of eligible Americans contribute to an IRA in any given year? What percentage of eligible Americans actually make a contribution to an IRA? So it's obviously between 0 and 100. So I like to bracket it like we always do. Jobs.
Why don't you talk jobs? It was you were the oracle of Jacksonville on this subject last week.
It's funny because right after the break, I've got a thing on the Oracle of Omaha.
Okay.
Which may be a little lesser known, but it's pretty sharp.
Knows a thing or two about a thing or two.
But last week, I said on this show, and you can go back and replay it, that the jobs reports that come out this week would be very disappointing. And I was basing that primarily on a single data point, and that was that in late June, about half the states terminated the $300 a week extra payments. The media said that that's not going to make any difference in August. And I said, that is incorrect. Those end Monday. I said, this report will be dismal because people are not going to go back to work until after Labor Day. So I'm going to duly predict now that a month from now when the job report comes out, it'll be much better. And by the way, despite all the stupid articles I've been able to gather about people weren't going back to work for various reasons, but it had nothing to do with the $300.
No, nothing.
Although you have to make $83,000 at a real job in some states to even break even with that. But Florida alone has increased its hiring 360,000 people since DeSantis took off the extra 300. Now, I'm telling you, if you're one of the 360,000, it didn't kill you to go back to work, right? And you're probably making more money than ever before. But think of the 360,000 employers who were able to find help who couldn't the month before. Now, that is contributing big time to a healthy economy, and I think it's very important. So on Wednesday, ADP came out with a private report, and it was about 374,000, and much more was expected.
625, actually.
Yeah. And then we got Thursday's layoffs, and they're in line with what's been happening lately, 340,000.
I think they were a new post-pandemic low.
Yeah, but only by a
smidge. By a hair,
but
yeah.
Still.
The trend is good.
Yeah, you know, the trend is good. And then Friday came out. So the headline we found was kaboom. They were expecting, what was that one, 700?
They were expecting 733.
Yeah, I was thinking about 750. So the big number gets released at 8:30 on Friday morning. Bang, 235,000. Well, who predicted that? I did. Why did it happen? I already explained it to you. So it is absolutely meaningless except for one thing. It's a very good lesson in how stupid those idiots in the media are and all the economic experts that keep predicting things that don't come true. But as usual, I'll dig a little bit deeper. The one that you hear about, oh, by the way, the unemployment rate dropped to 5.2 from 5.4, I think it was.
Yes.
And that means that more people got employed than entered the workforce. And that's ultimately a good thing. But the household survey showed 509. So what's happening in numbers of over 300,000, people are going back to their gig work.
Yeah,
that picks up all the newly employed stay-at-home types, and that is a good thing, people, a very good thing. So we're really not in terrible shape. Now, you add to that running out of these extra payments, and I think we're probably going to have a bang-up month. Now, there's a couple of statistics that are very important. One of them is the job openings, 10.1 million. There are about 5 million less people working today than there were pre-COVID. Now, you want to get that JOLTS number down to 5? Put them back to work. Boom, done. Another thing, there are claims going on. You know what the PUA and PEUC claims are? Those are the payments that were being made under the pandemic rules. And I call them the puke claims, PEUC. And they're 9.2 million. And when they expire, you're now going to have 9.2 million people chasing 10.1 million jobs. And I kind of like those odds.
Yeah, that sounds reasonable.
Yeah, but the biggest thing people have to realize is it's not about single people looking for jobs. That's important to the individuals. But to the economy, we got to get this economy humming. Get it opened up and get it humming. That means we need a lot of workers out there. So leave me on the side of very optimistic about this month's hiring. Plus, people went back to school, and there's going to open some jobs. And
yeah.
There's always a major shift in May and a major shift in September. And then we also have a couple of things on top of that about the market, but I'm going to let Adam wrap up anything in here before I bring it up.
Yeah, there's a couple of other things. I was watching football last night, watching the Virginia Tech-North Carolina game, and the Virginia Tech stadium was sold out. That's something you haven't seen in a long time.
They won, didn't they?
They did. They pulled off a major upset. But my point of bringing that up is that those events didn't really happen last year. And if you think about the economic impact mm-hmm. of one football game, sold out football game, the travel, the hotels, the food,
beer,
the beverages, just all of those sales that didn't happen last year, and to that magnitude that are happening this year, that's a huge economic stimulus. Now, most of that's localized in Virginia, in this case, but that's happening all over the country over the next few weeks. NFL games get started next weekend. The Jags are on the road, but the Saints and Packers is going to be here. That's going to be a huge thing for Jacksonville.
Oh, yeah, you got two sets of traveling teams.
Right, wow. Right. Plus all the locals going to the game. So,
plus all the Packer like fans that. In Jacksonville. There are at least four of us.
Yeah, I mean.
Well, I'm not going. My daughter will be there with her cheese head on, I'm sure.
Oh, we're going, yeah. For okay. sure. But those types of things that didn't happen last year that are happening now, I think is going to be a huge boost. Okay. And all those things require people to take part-time jobs to work in the stadium and to do all of the things that weren't happening last year. So I think there's more to come. I don't think we're done with the reopening trade. No. I think there's more. There's a lot of conferences coming up in the fall. Some have been getting canceled. I think that is a trend that will start to go away should this recent trend I was talking about earlier with COVID continue, where case counts are going lower. And so I just think there's more there. You didn't even mention the best part of the payroll report or the jobs report, though, and that was average earnings mm-hmm. actually came in at plus 4.3% versus an expected plus 3.9%. So people who are going back to work are making substantially more than they did before.
I will, however, put a little damper on that one. It's still not keeping up with the inflation.
Well, I don't think anything can keep up with the inflation we're seeing right now.
Yep, absolutely right.
All that money being printed is that's what happens.
Yep. All right, lines are open, 904-222-8255. It's 222-TALK. Trivia question still out there. What percentage of eligible Americans contribute on any given year, based on the 2015 metric anyway? And it's between 0 and 100. Nobody yet has whittled it down. All right, headlines this week. Got a few. On Monday, I pulled up my usual Monday morning finance pages, and I see three things next door to each other. First, second, third line. Number one. Surging inflation is a U.S. phenomenon, not a global one, which is intuitively just stupid.
Yeah, I don't buy that.
The second one, German inflation hits 13-year high in August. I am not making this up, right underneath it. And then the third one, inflation-worried Germans are loading up with gold. You know what that means? A lot of Germans are a lot smarter than a lot of Americans.
Well, I don't know. You might not think so because they're about to elect a pretty far-left government.
Well, you have a point there. So. Some things they'll just never learn. You know, maybe they'll get a lot more immigration. All right, Friday. And this one I'm bringing up, not because it's stupid or smart or anything. It's just funny because of the way I read it. Tesla aims to release $25,000 electric car in 2023. Likely will not have a steering wheel.
What?
And I'm thinking, boy, that's bare bones, isn't it? You strip a car down to $25,000, don't get a steering wheel with it.
Doesn't come with tires either.
Maybe you can get one in the aftermarket. I don't know exactly what they're going to do about this steering thing, but I know that they've been playing with a lot of the yoke types. And,
yeah.
And you know, some people think it ought to be a mouse type, and I say, God, no.
That would be awful. That sounds scary.
So anyway, I thought that was kind of a funny look at the way the news is being presented. There's, I guess I got about a million more and not too much time to do it, so let's see what, I know. Just introduced by Jayapal and Lamb and a bunch of the other very liberal Congress people, new bill lowers Medicare age to 60. And, of course, I react very, very sharply when I read things like that, like, no, it's going broke. And that's true. It is. But The interesting thing to me was the more I thought about it, the less I thought it was a bad idea.
I don't think it's a terrible idea. I think 62 might be a more appropriate age.
Yeah, you're thinking like I am.
Yeah.
But so many of our clients would love to retire early and make way for younger people, and a lot of them just flat cannot do it because of their health insurance. So we'll discuss this a little more when we come back. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour. Welcome back to the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
And again, lines are open, 904-222-8255. And the trivia question is still out there. What percent of eligible Americans actually contribute to an IRA annually? And a quick wrap-up here of the lowering Medicare to age 60. Adam and I were talking in the break, and he came up with what I consider a real doable thing. And making it maybe age 62, so it would coincide with early Medicaid, or Medicare, I mean.
No,
early Social Security. Thank you. I'm getting tongue-tied. And the problem that we would have with that is the same problem we have now, but it would be on steroids, perhaps, and that's the flat-out running out of money.
Yeah, so it would have to be funded by the individual who wanted to participate in it, but having a option to get health insurance for early retirees.
At a very reasonable price.
Yeah. I mean...
We have people in all the time who are looking at COBRA.
Yeah, it's crazy.
It's ridiculously expensive.
It is. And buying a family plan outside of a group plan is...
ridiculous.
Mean, easily $14,000 to $2,000 a month.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
Yeah, and it really has curtailed the plans, best laid plans of many people that have come in to see us, and they ask us if we have any ideas. I said, well, if you're 63 and a half, I've got a good one called COBRA, because that'll only go for 18 months, and then you'll be able to slide into Medicare. But if you're 62, I have nothing for you, absolutely nothing.
No, there isn't a lot of good options. I mean, you can use the exchange, I know people who do it, and it's okay, but it's still expensive, and,
right.
And the worst part about it is it's not that expensive month to month, but typically the deductibles are
If you get through a year where you got any illness and
you're going to come out of pocket a bunch. So if you're really healthy, it's a good plan, but if you're sick or attending,
but most people who are looking at retiring at 59 or so, even though healthy, their health is becoming more of a risk.
That tends to happen in your 60s. So
And think it gets any better in your 70s?
No, definitely not.
Anyway, the reason I brought this up was it was so interesting to me that my reaction, my instant reaction, just kind of immediately kicked in just not rush into this so much. And Adam had exactly the same reaction. So there must be something to it. One potential way to solve it's a serious problem for people impacted by it.
Yeah,
other people
definitely
wouldn't care a bit. But like Social Security, we've got to work on the income
what
side.
What I don't want to see is the solution be, well, we just
rich
need to
people.
Tax rich people more to pay for it. That,
exactly.
That doesn't make any sense.
No, it's way over. All right, well, Adam's got a PSA that we want to cover.
Yeah, for those of you that listen to the show, you may have heard me talk about this before. We have some very good family friends who lost their son to childhood cancer a couple of years ago, and they have formed a charitable foundation in his honor. All the proceeds are being donated to a researcher at St. Jude's who does research that targets this specific type of very deadly childhood cancer, leukemia. It's a specific type of leukemia. And they're actually holding a 5K race in Nocatee on Saturday, November 27th. And it is registration is open. It's $35. It goes up to $40 if you wait another couple months. But for now, it's $35. And really want to get some people out there. They're looking for sponsors as well. And if you want more information, you can go to www.joestrong.org and sign up. We'd love to see you out there.
Yeah. For those of you who are inclined toward that sort of activity, it should be a really beautiful time of the year to do it.
Yeah, and it's the morning of the Florida State football game, so you can go run. You can go pre-burn off all of the calories you're
that's
from later that day.
Replace.
Yeah,
gotcha. Like it. All right. There is another oracle out there. He's in Omaha when he's not somewhere else. You don't have to be a big fan of Warren Buffett. I think some of his views, in particularly in the arena of estate planning, are absolutely ridiculous. And he's always whining about his tax rate, but he set it up himself to have that tax rate. So those things I can take or leave. But let's say that he should be listened to when it comes to investing. You can ignore his advice at your own risk because, let's face it, he has made it. And he just turned 91. So being rich must be good for your health, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I'm willing to try to test that theory someday. All right, number 10. These are his 10 new things. I've got lists of all the quotes over the years, but these are the new ones, and it happened on August 30th this year. Number 10, it takes 20 years to build a reputation and 5 minutes to ruin it. Well, my father-in-law used to tell me that back in the 70s, because he knew that about as well as Warren Buffett does today, and it's absolutely true. And there are a lot of corollaries to that, like sometimes it's better just to stop talking and things like that. But it's a good one. Number 9, price is what you pay. Value is what you get. It seems sort of patently obvious, but I really like it. And the term that came to mind when I read that one is stock splits. Does the lower price stock, that the split stock, yeah, produce value, or is it just a price?
Yeah.
That's a tough one.
And the other one is, I can't buy that stock. It's too expensive.
It's too expensive, exactly.
Because it costs $500 for a share.
Yeah.
That doesn't make any sense.
Well, nowadays you can buy $5 worth.
You
partial
can,
share in any one of a number of places.
Yeah, but these are people that are they're still going to spend the same $10,000 on one stock, but they want to buy one that's $25 instead of $500, and that does not make
sense.
And
it's always been true that people gravitate to the lower prices. That's why stock splits were so incredibly interesting, I guess, and common
and
over
who
many
is
years.
Who is probably the single biggest proponent of what we're just talking about? Warren Buffett. Well, that's why Berkshire is
$168,000 a share.
I think it's more than that.
It probably is. That was last year, probably way up since then. Anyway, price is what you pay, value is what you get. Number 8, if past history was all that is needed to play the game of money, the richest people would be librarians. I like that.
Yeah.
Got to be more to it. John D. Rockefeller had one that's kind of similar. He says, if you're only in it for the money, you won't be successful.
That is also true.
Yep, I like it. Number 7, our favorite holding period is forever. Well, a value investor is very typically like that, where you're not intending to be speculating or day trading or even just waiting for a pop to get out. And you can see it in Berkshire. He will exit positions when needed.
He exited Delta last year.
That was probably in his book of biggest mistakes I ever made.
Yeah.
But he's willing to admit it.
Yeah.
No
and
problem.
He sold out.
Easy to admit it when you're worth a few billion, isn't it? Number 6. It's far better to buy a wonderful company at a fair price than a fair company at a wonderful price. Not really sure what that means. I don't know what a fair company is. Just
I hate the word fair.
I
think it's a good point. It means that just because something looks like a steal, if the company isn't run well, it's really not a bargain.
Okay. Well,
if you find a really strong company and you pay market price, the future looks better than a mediocre company at a bargain basement price.
Well, it's so difficult to me for the past several years to look at anything that uses the word fair in it, because it's been so distorted by the left-wing media. You know, your fair share and all that. But another good point. Number 5, never invest in a business you cannot understand.
We're just talking about Bitcoin.
We were, weren't we? Enough said.
Yeah.
Number 4, someone's sitting in the shade today because someone else planted a tree a long time ago.
That's probably my favorite.
Mm-hmm.
It is something that the world of immediate gratification has forgotten.
It has indeed. And my thought there was Johnny Appleseed. Number 3, predicting rain doesn't count. Building the ark does.
Also a good one.
What you do in advance can pay you back. Number two, we simply attempt to be fearful when others are greedy, and to be greedy only when others are fearful. And that, to me, is the definition of a value investor. And I've watched Buffett for decades, and that's exactly what he does.
Yep.
Just exactly. Number one, it's only when the tide goes out that you discover who's been swimming naked. I think I'll just leave that one alone. But it does make sense. You know, there's a lot of people who are all talk. Well, put it this way, they're all hat, no cattle.
Yeah, and people that take a lot of risk when times are good get exposed when times turn bad.
Isn't that the truth? All right, we'll be right back with the final segment. Don't go anywhere. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour. Welcome back to the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
And the lines are open, 904-222-8255. And you can still win some of Mr. Bale's money if you can come up with the percentage of people who are eligible to make IRA contributions who actually do. I'll give you a hint. It's under 50. He's like, I'm so nice. I cut it in half. What a deal, huh? All right. You had something. Actually, we've kind of got the same idea here, but I wanted you to dive into it a little bit.
On the house title?
Yeah. That one in particular. There's a couple more, too, but this one's really important.
We've gotten quite a few inquiries lately about thieves stealing your home title by filing a falsified deed transfer or something like that. And they're all coming from one place. There's been a series of commercials, and they're clearly targeting older conservative people. They're running on all the conservative talk radio, conservative news stations, television. And it's very frantic, and it warns you that these thieves are going to steal your home by transferring the title illegally, and you need the only way that you can solve this problem you didn't know about is by paying $79 a year for $1 million of title theft insurance to this company, and you have to do it right now.
Exactly. And, before you find out the truth.
Yes. And according to I'll give props to Rick Kaler, who wrote this article. It's highly unlikely that any such company will ever pay out a dime of insurance, he says, and I completely agree with that
license
sentiment.
To steal.
This just is not an issue. Have you ever heard of anyone getting their home stolen in this way, even anecdotally through a third party?
Well, yeah, that nice lady on TV.
Yeah.
In the commercial.
Exactly. Who's probably a paid actress.
You think?
I don't know if... I just think that you purchase title transfer insurance when you buy the house. That's a big, big portion of your closing costs. If that did happen to you, it would be an illegal transfer. And if you took it to a court and they recognized that it was illegal, the buyer would be out the money because you bought something fraudulently. And that's how that works. You don't need insurance to cover you for something that's already illegal.
You think the thief who stole it would have any title insurance or anything like that?
Probably not.
I kind of think maybe not.
So basically the summary is that these commercials are very effective because they get people all worked up about something that doesn't exist. And they make you want to spend $79 a year for something that's worth about $0 a year.
Your other comment of where these commercials are played was interesting, too.
Well, I think they've done a good job. These people know their market. Mm-hmm. And they want to go after people who use LifeLock, which is a legitimate service that actually monitors credit. And so they think, okay, so these people are already worried about this kind of thing, and I think that we can sell them on this additional add-on product. And it's good marketing for a terrible product is what it is.
Yep. All right. On our today's random walk down the last few minutes of the show, the Social Security Trust Fund annual report is due in April. Well, it actually came out last week now. It was apparently a year of a little more turmoil than most. So Janet Yellen was way, way behind. But I don't know if they're trying to spin this to make it better or if it's just a realistic look, but it's better than expected, but dismal. Now, What does that mean? The powers that be were estimating the impact of COVID on Social Security. Obviously, when you put, 15 million people out of work or mm-hmm. something like that, the inputs to the Social Security system drop rapidly, but your payouts don't, because those are a different group of people, the getters versus the givers. So they had estimated, the old number was, 2033, I think. They had estimated that Social Security will use up the, quote, trust fund. And the feeling, the consensus, which is a word I don't like either, but the consensus was that it might take it all the way back to 2029, kind of a scary thought. But it actually came out that it only took 1 year off at 2032.
Now, this is a bit morbid, but I wonder if the excess deaths from COVID also played a part in that estimate moving only 1 year down instead of 5 years.
Very possible.
6 years.
You know, the death rate is skewed in the older, and they'd be in the recipients, the beneficiary
yeah. oh,
stage.
Over 60% of the death has been in that
case. And it actually, on average, took a year off our life expectancy, too. So
yeah.
that will go away, and
it will.
Numbers
It'll be
should start coming
out
up.
When, yeah.
But the system's in trouble. It's been in trouble for a long time, and we know it's been in trouble for a long time. So along comes Joe Biden. We're going to fix it, right? Most people understand that Social Security, the FICA portion of your payroll tax, is with, oh, excuse me a moment. Good morning, Leroy.
Hey, good morning. How you guys doing?
Good. How you feeling? Lucky?
Good. I just figured I had to, somebody has to get their feet wet on this question.
It yeah.
might as well be me.
Yep.
34%.
I'm going to tell you that's not just a little bit too high.
A little bit too high?
Not no. just okay. a little bit.
Way too high.
Way too high.
Wow.
It doesn't make sense, does it?
No, no. But I had another guess. It was lower than that, but it probably wasn't. If this was way too high, then my other one was still too high.
Well, I appreciate you doing the bracketing job for everybody. We're running down to the last few minutes. So don't go anywhere. If nobody gets it, I'll tell you. And I'm telling you, you're not going to like it any more than I did.
Okay, that's fine.
Thanks. Have a good one. Have a good Labor Day.
Bye.
Yep. Way too high. Anyway, the first $147,000 or so, the FICA's taken out. And, of course, your Medicare part of it is unlimited for earned income. That the 2.9 or 1.45 for the individual and 2.9 for the self-employed. But then it stops right now. So one of Biden's things, his platforms, said that he wouldn't raise taxes on people under $400,000 in income, and I'll argue all kinds of stuff on a different day about whether or just how true or how false that one is, but that has nothing to do with it. He wants Social Security, the FICA portion, to pick up again at $400,000. So you would be paying a huge amount of money if you make $500,000 or $600,000. Excuse me. Good morning, Bosco.
Good morning, y'all. Another great, great program.
Thanks so much. We appreciate it. You got a guess?
Your question, I wanted to say 10%.
Well, 10% is an excellent guess, but it's too high.
I was going to say, take that one off, maybe?
Yeah, I was going to give one away, and I still can't give it to you.
Excellent.
We appreciate
All
the
right.
call. Have
Y'all
a good
a
long
weekend.
Weekend.
Good Labor Day as well.
Yeah, thanks so much. I appreciate it. You can just feel this question getting worse, can't
yeah.
you? Anyway, if you met a half million, for instance, you'd be paying the 6.2% on another $100,000.
Or if you're self-employed, then
if you're self-employed, the whole thing.
4.4,
yeah. And it seems ludicrous to me, and of course, over time, what happens to the size of a donut
But you
hole?
Don't get any more benefit for
No, you get nothing.
So,
it's a tax.
Yeah.
That's all it is. It's an income tax.
It is a.
It's like Irma. When Irma charges you for your Part D Medicare, even if you don't carry it, the Social Security lady I was talking to, who was just extraordinary, wonderful at her job, she said, no, that's an income tax.
Yeah.
I said, well, thank you. In fact, I talked about her on the show once because it was so interesting to find someone so brutally honest, because that's what it is. Anyway, this is an income tax proposal. And think about if you're making $2-3 million, or what about a movie star or things like that? Well, I guess they don't really care that much because they make so much money.
Right.
But you can't tell me people don't care about things like that. You want to take home as much as you can. Even Oprah Winfrey said that. She's got more than she could spend. So this is one of the proposals, and there's a lot more to the story that I can't get into today. But look out, because right now in the halls of Congress, they're debating many, 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 many tax increases to try to pay for their new spending programs.
Yeah. It takes the top two tax brackets to over 40%.
Yeah, exactly. And in some states, it'd be 50. Only 8% of Americans who are eligible contributed, at least in 2015, to an IRA. People, you're leaving money on the table and you're shooting yourself in the foot from a retirement standpoint. You got to do better. Call us. See you next week. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour.